Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. I'm your host for this episode, Dean Abbott. Wesley J. Smith is a writer and an expert on the growing threats to human dignity and exceptionalism. He's here now to talk about the current state of the debate over those issues, especially regarding the development of human cloning technology. Thanks for joining us, Wesley.
Hey, Dean, how you doing?
Good. Where do we stand right now regarding developments in the field of human cloning?
You know, a lot of people may not realize it, but human cloning has actually already been accomplished. A couple of years ago, scientists were able to use the same technique that led to Dolly the sheep and created human embryos in that same manner. They let these embryos develop normally like any embryo would to about the 10-day stage. When they could have implanted the embryos into a woman's uterus, they did not do that. Instead, they destroyed the embryos in order to derive embryonic stem cells from them, which they were able to do successfully. So human cloning has been done. You know, Dean, a lot of people think that human cloning means the birth of a baby. That is not human cloning. That is one use of human cloning. The actual act of cloning is when, through asexual means, a new embryo is created, after which the embryo proceeds to develop like a naturally fertilized embryo.
And where is this going? Do you think we'll see a baby who's been allowed to be born, who's a clone at some point in the near future?
Unless it's prohibited internationally, I believe we will at some point see that. I don't think that's coming in the next year or two because there are so many safety issues. Right now, even with animal cloning, which is continuing to be done in terms of dogs, in terms of cattle and so forth, oftentimes there are real problems in the development of the fetus that came from a cloning act, and often the animals themselves have serious health issues. I think that most scientists, even those who are the most radical in terms of culture, would at this point say, don't try it on humans because you could end up with a catastrophe in terms of safety. But unfortunately, I believe that many scientists and many among the bioethical field and so forth have no concerns whatsoever about creating human life as a method of manufacture. And that's what we're talking about. Human cloning opens the door even beyond where we already are with some of the IVF technologies to treating human procreation as a matter of manufacture, to which you would then also apply quality controls, genetic engineering in terms of not only for health, but perhaps for sex, and also for things such as enhancement of various attributes that quote parents, close quote, might desire. And what really concerns me about all of this is there really is no regulatory oversight. Some of these technologies are clearly the most powerful invented by human beings since the splitting of the atom. And yet we don't have any strict international protocols to govern their development in a positive manner, nor do we have any even United States regulations other than preventing federal funding for human cloning because of the Dickey Wicker Amendment that prevents embryonic destructive research to be federally funded. And so we're kind of in a wild, wild west situation in which the ethics of this field and what is done depends on the self-restraint of the scientists doing it. And I think that's a thin reed to stand on.
Are there some technological or biological or financial impediments to this technology developing even more quickly?
Yes, there's one aspect of one natural resource, if you will, that cloners need in abundance, and that is human eggs, if you're going to do human cloning. Because here's how somatic cell nuclear transfer, that's what it's called, is done. You take an egg cell, you take out the nucleus. Let's say you're going to clone me. You then take one of my skin cells or one of my other somatic cells, and you take out the nucleus. You take the nucleus from my cell, put it in the egg cell. You then have an enucleated egg that has a new nucleus in it, which would be my nucleus. You stimulate that egg. And if the cloning works, which is still difficult in terms of efficiency, but if the cloning works, then that the properties of the egg transform itself into a one-celled zygote embryo in the same way that happens when sperm meets egg, fertilization occurs and a zygote results. At that point, you have created new human life asexually, meaning you have not used sperm and egg. And at that point, the new human organism, which was asexually created, will develop like a naturally fertilized embryo will develop. At that point, the cloning is over. And as I said earlier, all that matters now, or what has to be determined at that point, is what do we do with this new human life that has been manufactured? Because that's what we're talking about, creating human life via a method of manufacture. The problem for the cloners is that eggs, human eggs, are in short supply. In order to get human eggs today, you need to hyperstimulate a woman's ovaries so that she produces 30 eggs in a cycle instead of one or two, which is the natural process. Now, that's a very difficult procedure. It requires women to undergo a rigorous medical procedure. It can lead to serious side effects. A lot of women aren't going to want to do that. And so what has inhibited the true development of cloning in an efficient manner is that there is what I call the egg dearth. There just aren't that many human eggs for use in biotechnological research. What they're trying to do to overcome that is to find alternative means for obtaining human eggs rather than taking them from women of childbearing age. One of the things that they're trying to do is turn using a different technology called induced pluripotent stem cells. That is, they can take a skin cell, they can, using scientific processes, revert that skin cell into a pluripotent stem cell capable of becoming any type of cell, and then turning that into an egg cell. And they've been able to actually do some of that with turning these cells into immature eggs. If they can ever turn them into mature eggs, then there will be an unlimited supply of human eggs for human cloning. Another area that is being investigated in this regard is to take relatively late-term female fetuses that have been aborted, take their ovaries, because fetuses develop all the eggs that they will ever have in gestation, and then try to obtain the eggs from these aborted fetus ovaries and learn how to mature the eggs so that they can be used. That's been in research for several years. I don't think they've been able to accomplish that yet. Also, taking eggs from women who might have to have their ovaries removed for health reasons and seeing if they can mature those eggs. So there is a great deal of effort underway to find a way to overcome the egg dearth, to mass manufacture human eggs, after which you will see mass human cloning unleashed unless there's regulatory inhibitions toward that end.
The last time I remember any cultural or political debate in this country about this issue specifically was during the George W. Bush administration. Why has this kind of fallen off the radar culturally, and what does that mean for our going forward?
There's a couple of reasons. First, I was deeply involved in that debate with regard to George W. Bush. The debate arose because he put some very modest federal funding restrictions on embryonic stem cell research that is not from cloning, that would use embryos, that had been previously created and frozen, and then they were going to use these embryos in research. There was a lot of hype at that time among the scientists that people are going to get out of their wheelchairs and walk, and that, you know, cures, this whole kind of thing. Part of that debate dealt with human cloning, because one of the problems with embryonic stem cell therapies, which have, by the way, not yet been really developed in human beings, there have been very few human trials, and most of those dealt with things like macular degeneration, is that if you use embryonic stem cells from an embryo that was frozen and then destroyed for the cells, and you put it into a person, well, then what would happen is that the immune response could reject those cells, and that's a big problem. That's where the cloning supposedly came in, where, okay, how we'll overcome that is we will create human clones of people. They called it therapeutic cloning, people might remember. We'll create human cloned embryos and then use those embryonic stem cells for the patient who was cloned so that there wouldn't be that immune rejection. Well, what happened with Bush, his focus on the importance, the moral issue of the importance of the embryo, helped lead to a real tremendous breakthrough called the induced pluripotent stem cell process, which I mentioned previously, where you can actually create pluripotent stem cells from skin cells. So you don't need to destroy embryos and you don't need to create embryos. That took some of the impetus away from the push for cloning. The second reason that it was a huge thing is that that whole issue was used by the liberal media as a way to a brickbat to try to pound Bush as uncaring and unfeeling in a political sense. And the third reason, and the reason why these breakthroughs that I've discussed earlier, for example, human cloning actually having been done, making very little news, is because the scientists during the Bush years were touting human cloning as a potential source of cures. They got smart because people reacted very negatively to the concept of human cloning. So now they will say things like, well, somatic cell nuclear transfer has occurred, and most people don't pick up that's human cloning. Or they will say in a kind of a mendacious way, well, we've been able to obtain embryonic stem cells from a non-fertilized egg, when that's not actually what's occurred, because in human cloning, what you've actually done is created an embryo asexually. So there's been a lot of either using scientific jargon or using a kind of a subterfuge of inaccurate language to announce their findings, and then that doesn't get reported in the mainstream media. And so people aren't even aware of it.
Well, thank you for that update, Wesley, and we hope you'll join us here on ID the Future again soon.
It would be my great pleasure. Thank you very much, Dean.
For ID the Future, I'm Dean Abbott.
In September 1906, nearly a quarter of a million people flocked to the Bronx Zoo in New York City. Many came for a startling new exhibit in the zoo's monkey house. But it wasn't a monkey they came to see. It was a man. His name was Oda Benga, from the African Congo. The riveting new documentary Human Zoos tells his story and shines a light on America's forgotten history of scientific racism. Oda Benga was one of thousands of human beings put on public display throughout America in the early 20th century. Often touted as evolutionary missing links between ape and man, these native peoples from around the world were harassed, demeaned, and jeered at, all with the enthusiastic support of the scientific community. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. Learn more at humanzoos.org or get the film at Amazon or Amazon Prime today.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.